You're listening
to the CD Baby.
CD Baby.
CD Baby.
DIY. DIY.
Oh. Musician.
Musician. Podcast.
Hey there, and welcome to episode number 196 of the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast. My name is Kevin Bruner, your host for the show. And in today's episode, you're going to hear a discussion from the DIY Musician Conference about how to prepare your music for a successful release. Now, there's a big difference between making your music available and actually releasing your album or song in a meaningful way that connects with folks and takes advantage of all the options that you have at your fingertips to promote your music and to make sure that it is released and monetized properly. So in this discussion, you'll hear from CD Baby's Patrick Griffin, Anna Held, Ben Hubbard, and Chris Robley from the podcast about what they see working and failing with the hundreds of releases that we help distribute every day. There's a lot of strategic opportunity when you release an album. There's a lot of tactical things that need to be done and details that have to be followed. And, all these things, when you pay attention to, help your release go further than if you just throw it out there last minute. So you're going to hear that discussion. Before that, I know that we have a lot of new listeners to the podcast. Wanted to make sure you knew to subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss an episode. If you're listening in iTunes, you can do that in the iTunes podcast section. You can subscribe there. Or if you're using a podcatching device, like I use an app called Overcast, you can subscribe there. Also, if you want to leave a review for us in the iTunes podcast section, we love your 5-star reviews and always appreciate that. Also, if you have some sort of release strategy or a tip for releasing an album, something that's worked, or maybe a mistake story, feel free to call our listener line at 360-524-2209 or email us at podcast@cdbabypodcast.com or just head on over to the podcast website and leave a message in the show notes. Lastly, one final note. This was recorded at the 2017 DIY Musician Conference, and the intro got cut off a little bit, and it appears that the end of it got cut off during some of the Q&A, but the bulk of all the content is still there, so I didn't want that to keep us from putting this out on the podcast. So it'll pick up right where Chris is doing the intro, and it'll end during the Q&A. So this is How to Prepare Your Music for a Successful Release.
Goes out into the world in a way where it's connecting with the people who need to hear it. And, you don't want to just make your music available. You want to make sure it has an impact. The reason the four of us are talking about this is because each of us works for CD Baby in a different capacity, and we help 200 to 300 new releases go out into the world every day. And we see a lot of really good releases and a lot of releases that are handled not to the optimum potential. That's not an assessment of the quality of the music, just how much planning and thought has gone into it. And, if you have a new release and you want to get it on SpyTunes. I'm done here. If you want to get it on SpyTunes by Friday, we can't do it because it doesn't exist, but we can get it on iTunes and Spotify by Friday. But why are you going to miss out on all of the opportunities you could create for yourself if you just have a little bit more thought? So with that, I think we'll just quickly introduce ourselves and get into the discussion. Want to go?
Me? Oh, okay. Hi, I'm Ben. I work at CD Baby. I do digital promotions and label relations. I work with some of our top-selling artists and labels and also help curate the catalog and present the selections to Spotify and iTunes and kind of pitch them on our priority releases each week.
I'm Anna, and I'm the Director of Customer Service at CD Baby, and I manage our team of 35 support reps that you'll probably talk to if you call or chat or email us. And I've been with the company since 2004, so I've seen a lot of really good releases and a lot of suboptimal ones. But we're dealing with about 1,500 contacts from artists a day who are putting out records, who are checking up on why they're not on iTunes yet. You might have been in that position yourself. So that's why I'm here, to kind of help guide basically don't do this. If you want to know what not to do, I'm probably the best person you could talk to.
It's very important to know what not to do. My name is Griffin. I also work at CD Baby, obviously. I'm in a department with Ben here doing a labor relations, digital promotions. But my side of it is a bit of the A&R, outreach to other clients or musicians who could use some quality independent distribution. And we've been with CD Baby about 8 years now. And I'm from Portland, Oregon. Anybody from the Northwest? Any Northwesterners in the room?
Yeah.
You should clap for yourself. Don't raise your hand. Clap for yourself.
My name is Chris Robley. I'm on the marketing team at CD Baby, and I edit the DIY Musician blog, and I'm a frequent guest on the DIY Musician podcast. I no longer live in Portland, Oregon. I now live in Portland, Maine. I feel that's my comfort zone, just staying in Portland. I also am a musician. I shouldn't say also. I'm a musician, so I've used CD Baby to put out 7 albums in the last 10 years, and some of them I've had 6 months preparation, sometimes 3 months, and sometimes I've been that guy that's been like, hey, can we get this out by Friday?
Chris emailed me like in April, like, I want to put a single out in 2 days.
Yeah. So that leads me to the first question. What is the right way to put out music now in 2017?
Didn't mean to call you out like that. That's a big question, Chris.
Is there a right way?
I don't think there's one right way, but I definitely think that what people miss out on is the opportunity to define what that process is going to look like for them, right? So it's kind of deciding what you want to do with your music if you're putting out an album, if you're putting out singles, and really knowing that ahead of time so that you can plan accordingly, because it's different if you're just going to put out, we were talking about it, the analogy was, if you're putting out a novel, don't write a bunch of short stories and then throw them together because it doesn't make sense, right? So if you think about that ahead of time and you know that you want to achieve a certain thing with your music and you're trying to reach a certain audience, then there is a right way for you. There's not one right way.
Yeah. I think that's a really great way to put it, that there's not, like, what works for another artist doesn't necessarily work for you. And I think what we want to explore and talk about today is how to figure out the right strategy for your release. What is, you know, finding your truth, right?
Now, not to undermine what you just said there, but there is one thing that every artist, no matter what, should keep in mind and uniformly should consider, is setting a release date that gives you enough time to get things in order. If you are working on an album for 6 months and it is your heart and soul, why would you release it 2 weeks after it's done and not give yourself enough time to build any kind of anticipation? Because what can you really achieve in 2 weeks? One interesting way to think about it is, earlier this year, Kendrick Lamar released an album. It was kind of unannounced, just seemed like a surprise, and nobody had heard about it. But the people at iTunes had heard about it for months because they had been preparing and getting their site ready to feature it correctly. So even if it appears, even if your strategy is unannounced, behind the scenes, it's you're going to shoot yourself in the foot if you don't create a plan and a window of time in case things go wrong or something doesn't go correctly, or your music video editor needs an extra week to finish the editing. If you're, if you have a hard release date and you don't have enough time to be agile, then you're going to just be frustrated and angry and feel like you've wasted your time.
Yeah, I think one thing that that can really help in sort of when you first sit down and talk about with your whoever your team is, if it's you and your band, if you have a manager. Talking about what your goals are for the release, thinking about what you want to achieve with the release, and then building a step-by-step plan that gets you there, I think is something that, you know, people don't do frequently enough that really can make a big difference. If you realize, we actually don't care about making money on this record, we're mostly just trying to get it into as many people's ears as possible, all of a sudden, your plan doesn't necessarily look like trying to sell pre-orders, but looks like mailing out postcards to all your friends, giving away the record for free. Like, if you're trying to accomplish making as much money as possible from the record, you know, then your strategy would be different. But you know, looking at your goals and making a strategy that gives you a realistic chance to meet those goals, I think is really important.
Yeah. So one thing I know is, like, if you're, let's say your goal is to have a national press campaign and a national tour, you know, you're looking at like a, I don't know, 6 month window or something. You want to do a regional release, 3 months or so. I'm not sure if I'm pegging these timelines correctly, but How do you guys, when you're talking with clients who are preparing, like, how do you focus the conversation around what their goals are and what time and budget and resources they need to sort of allot to achieve that goal?
I think that for me, because these guys are doing the digital promotions and stuff, and I'm talking to everybody, you know, all of the albums that are coming out on a daily basis, we're talking to, you know, 1,500 people a day. The conversation that I've had with people more times than I can count in the last 15 years is, I'm so sorry you spent $10,000 on your release party and you don't have a mix that you're happy with, and now you have to postpone it, and I can't get you on iTunes by Friday. That conversation happens so often, and it's such a bummer because we want to help. But there is a logistical kind of just a limitation, right? You call up your distributor, if it's us or someone else, there really isn't much we can do when you've left us no time. And because of that, we have really bummer conversations with people about that. So my advice always is, if you're going to set a release date, if that's part of your plan to have a release party or have a pre-release or something, don't do anything until the whole thing is done.
Yeah.
Don't set a date for anything. Don't tell anybody it's happening. Don't announce it until they have a way to retrieve that music. Don't say, hey, this album's dropping on September 1st if it's not ready to go.
Yeah, and even beyond that, if it's not available for pre-order, like if you're putting out an album and you tell everyone, my album's coming out on September 30th, you just wasted that moment if the person who sees that and wants to buy your album can't. Right? Like, you just reached them. They just heard you say that your album was available on September 30th and they want to buy your record.
But that's 2 weeks away, and they're going to forget.
So what you have to think about is, like, okay, if I want to announce my record that's coming out on September 30th, I want to announce that record on September 1st, and on September 1st, I want to tell everyone about this record. That means my pre-order needs to be live on September 1st. So then you need to back yourself up weeks from September 1st, you know, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, a month, and say, okay, now I think it's 30 days is ideal,
at least,
like,
yeah,
to set up a pre-order. So 30 days backwards from September 1st and say, okay, on August,
so, 3 weeks ago. Down, guys.
anyways, the big picture is, when you finish recording a record and you have the master recordings in your hands and you have the artwork all done and you have the bio all written, you have your release strategy all mapped out, that's when you get to say, okay, here's when we want to release this record. And you have that conversation with you and your band and your manager or whoever else is on your team, and you set those dates at that point when everything is ready to go. And you come to us and you say, hey, in 30 days, I would like to launch the pre-order for this record. And my first single is going to be my instant gratification song, and that's what's happening in 30 days. And that gives you 30 days to then shop around to blogs and magazines. If you're working with a publicist, that gives your publicist time to find a premiere for your track, and start to talk about how they should write about this when it's announced on September 1st, right? Like, you're not announcing it yet. You're saying, we're going to announce this. We want you to write about it on this date.
I was just going to make a quick note about this pre-order thing he's talking about. It's Amazon and iTunes, basically. You purchase the album before it's released. You get an instant gratification track right away. And then on the day the album officially drops, you download it then. And all of those sales are tallied for that one day of launch, which can help you, you know, for charting. And it is something we facilitate. Yeah. But
it's available through Google Play as well. Spotify is creating a type of pre-order, Deezer, Tidal. Everybody is creating that type of thing because it's so popular for that reason of, it gives people a chance to buy something when they hear about it, as opposed to having to remember the date that they want to come back to that site. All of these companies are trying to keep eyes on their site. They're trying to get people to go to the site, make the transaction, and stay there. So giving people the opportunity to do that, and it can be as simple as the difference between a Facebook post that says my album is coming out September 30th and a Facebook post that says my album is coming out September 30th. Here is a link to the pre-order on iTunes is huge.
Yeah. I don't want to get too into the weeds, but I think it's worth a quick stroll at least into the garden to talk about Spotify, because I think We've talked a lot about pre-orders, but it's also really important that you're reaching your fans who are subscribers or use Spotify as a free service with your singles and as your album campaign's ramping up. And the way that we recommend this, and Chris and I did a couple of presentations, I think we saw a few of you there, so I'll be quick, but the way that we recommend doing this is to set up a playlist on Spotify that has all of your back catalog in one place. You can customize the art and customize the description, and in that description you say, this is a playlist celebrating my new record that's coming out on September 30th. We're using a terrible example.
I know.
And then as the singles come out, you add them to the top of that playlist, and then when you are telling people to listen to your music on Spotify, you give them the link to that playlist, which means that they're going to hear your new single, they're going to see your message that says, my new album's coming on September 30th, and when that single is done, they're going to hear every other song that you've ever made, rather than being redirected to something random that Spotify thinks they might like. So that
they're going to get an email from Spotify saying, yeah, this artist you love has updated this playlist that you're interested in. Click here to follow.
Yeah, exactly.
And that sort of initial momentum on Spotify, as well as something like that launch date where you've got a bunch of pre-sales on iTunes, is really important for creating that first burst of energy and making that impact, because if you wait, then you might have missed your moment to gain the momentum. But I wanted to back up. So we've been talking about like announcing your record, but before you do that, you have to kind of prepare it. And you mentioned having a mastered album or a mastered single, artwork. What else do they need to sort of gather together to do this right and bring to a distributor?
So I think in general, yeah, having mixes that you love is important, because what happens a lot is people will upload what they think is their final master, and then they get around to listening to it again outside of the studio, weeks pass, they've slept on it, and they're like, whoa, this is not as good as I thought it was. And then you have to go back and record, and that delays things. So I would say making sure that you really, truly love the recording that you're going to put out in the world, because nothing we do is going to make it any better. There's no magic button. Yeah. So make sure that it's good.
Listen to it on headphones. Listen to it on shitty speakers. Listen to it in your car.
Seriously. Mm-hmm. Listen to it on the crappiest speakers you can find, because a lot of I don't have good headphones, right? I have crappy ones. And earbuds are terrible. So listen to it on earbuds. And if it sounds terrible on earbuds, you might want to make some tweaks, right?
I had a studio that I recorded at had a really, really cheap Sony boombox on the counter above like the $50,000 reference monitors. And that boombox had a sticker on it that said Peoria. And his motto was, well, yeah, before we call the mix final, we have to see how it plays in Peoria. And
yeah.
But I think also there's, you know, you want to think about metadata, because the metadata is all of the data that goes along with the album. It's the songwriters, it's the composers, it's all of your track titles and all of that. And I cannot tell you guys, people spell their own names wrong so often, you would not believe. And that stuff is pretty much permanent. When we send it out to the partners and stuff, when it goes out for distribution, there's very little we can do to take it back. And so you really need to make sure that you have, like, crossed your T's and dotted your I's and had like four other people that aren't you do it too, because they know how to spell your name.
And before you misspell your name, you want to search Google to make sure no one else has your name. If they do, maybe you change your name, because
I had a discussion with a person a couple weeks ago and their name is something really common. This isn't their name, but I'll just make it up. It was like Joy Smith or something. And she was really mad that there was like four other Joy Smiths out there. And I was like, I'm so sorry you didn't Google yourself, but I can't do anything about that. And we can't separate artists very easily on partner sites, so it makes it really confusing. And so what I would recommend is, especially if you're a band, I mean, if it's your name, what are you gonna do? Except for maybe go by your middle name, maybe. But if you're a band especially, please Google it before you print your artwork. Because it's such a bummer when, you know, there's 17 bands with that name, and you think it's super original because it sounds awesome, but so many other people also think it sounds awesome.
And you also don't want to get sued.
That too.
And you also want to make sure that that you're finding your own individual voice. As we've seen at CD Baby, as the value of music kind of has gone down a little bit, the ease of creating music is easier than ever before, and the accessibility of music is easier than ever before. So what is really more valuable now is your individuality and your authenticity, because now that there's so much music listeners, they don't want to hear you just ripping off a more famous or another artist, because they already can access that artist. It's not hard to get to their music. So what we've seen is a lot of independent artists that have really made huge strides just by like being themselves as much as possible and creating the story and the narrative around everything they do, from their artwork, from their bio, from the way that they talk and interact with fans on their social media. When they stay within that voice and that individual like persona, people really respond to it because they feel like they're not, that this artist is just making art to express himself and not to get something out of you. So when you listen to them, you're getting a gift from them. It seems kind of strange since we're in the music business, but really like authenticity is worth more than ever before.
I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it's important to point out that you're not talking about necessarily you have to use your legal name as your artist name, but
right.
rather that being yourself in like musically and as a sort of brand
right.
has a tremendous value, the authenticity. I don't want to call you out in any way, John, but I talked to an artist earlier who works in like 30 different genres and does music in, you know, gospel and blues and jazz, and I said, and I think I gave him the same advice that Jay Scavo from Damon gave him, which is like, you don't need to have that all as one artist. Those are like, if you write a really fantastic bluegrass record and then you write a really fantastic rock record, I don't think people would expect those to be by the same artist. You should figure out how to like explore that part of you that really loves bluegrass and cares about bluegrass and develop a brand and an identity around your love of bluegrass. And that is the artist that releases that bluegrass record. And then dive into your rock self and spike your hair and release that rock record. But those are going to be different projects and different artists. I think that's, I don't know.
Unless... My caveat would be, all right. I think a lot of times people think they're doing wildly different things. Oh, I'm doing my jazz thing now it's bluegrass. And really, if it's the same person driving it, there can be a sensibility that everyone will recognize as you. If that's the case, I see no problem with keeping all your diverse projects under a name. So you're talking about authenticity and brand and all this. That is so crucial for publicity and promotion opportunities that could open up. Do we want to talk about what you guys see working in terms of artist stories or maybe some common pitfalls in artist bios and what they think is their pitch?
Yeah. One thing, we met with some folks from Spotify earlier this year. They were just kind of giving some information to a bunch of different labels. And the guy who runs all of their playlists was really adamant about... He's like, you know, when we are trying to build these playlists, we don't care if the music is coming from Warner Brothers or Interscope or CD Baby or Ditto, DistroKid or whoever. We don't care if this artist has you know, 1 million followers or 1,000 followers. We care if they have 5, because that's not great. But the point he was trying to make was it's about the music itself and does it fit into the story that they're trying to tell with the playlist that they're creating. So if your song has a great PR campaign and it's, you know, you're being backed by a major label, but it doesn't work with what they're trying to do and it will cause their listeners to turn off that playlist, then they won't add you. So what we got from that was you have to be able to tell the story of the song and of your music and from an emotional way, not just from a numerical, I have this many Facebook followers, I have this many, you know, Instagram likes or whichever. Those are important and they can show that you're interacting with people and building a community, but also being able to tell the story of your music in an emotionally resonant way with people really makes a difference. And being able to stay within that voice and not trying to sell it as a product, but sell it as an emotion.
Yeah, I think talking about like leading up to an album release, if you're doing publicity for yourself or if you're hiring a publicist, one of the first things that they're gonna ask is, you know, if you've written a bio. And I think we kind of brainstormed some thoughts around writing a good bio or writing a good pitch. But ultimately, I think Griffin's getting at the most core thing, which is just writing it really true to your story and figuring out what it is in your, not like I was born in 1981 in Eugene, Oregon, and I went to high school and then I went to college, you know. But telling your the most compelling part of your story. So thinking about yourself as a music writer, and thinking how many terrible, boring bios they have to read every day, and then thinking about what would make you interested to hear more. Like, why do I care about this artist? What is it that they have to say that is actually going to mean something to me, that I can write a story for my readers and that they're actually going to read and listen to? And I think it's part of it is like thinking about your story from different angles, like thinking about how, like, what do these songs mean to me? What was the origin of when I started to sit down and write these songs? Is there a theme that ties these songs together? You know, I think one of the most famous good bio examples is the story about Bon Iver recording the first record, when everybody who ever wrote about that record wrote about how they went up to a cabin in the woods and recorded the record in this cabin. And,
oh, look, there's Pro Tools.
Yeah. And I think it was really smart and well executed, partly because it was really authentic to the way that they made the record. They were telling the story about how they made the record, but also it was piggybacking on a cultural moment, which was exactly as Chris said, all of a sudden you can record a record anywhere and anybody can make a record at home. And they latched onto that and wrote a story for that record that really tied into that cultural narrative. So thinking about what stories people want to tell anyways, you know, rags to riches success stories or other, you know, cultural sort of zeitgeists that people would want to write a story about anyways.
Also, I think, though, part of that, like, the Bon Iver story is interesting because there was a consistent narrative around that, and it was editorialized. And I think editorializing is really hard for artists, right? I'm a photographer, not a musician, but I take 150 photographs, and I'm like, yes, they're awesome. All of them are awesome, but that's not true. They're not all awesome. And not everything about me is interesting, right? When I meet somebody, I don't tell them that I went to high school in Glen Rock, Pennsylvania. I don't tell them that I tell everyone I have three dogs, but I don't say everything because not everybody needs to know everything. And I know there's this kind of instinct, I think, to share. And, you know, when you're putting yourself out there, there's this instinct to share everything about yourself that people don't need to know, and they have short attention spans. So choosing that piece of the narrative, like the Bon Iver story, I don't know anything else about that record except that. And that's enough, right? That's enough, and it's interesting. And so really being careful about editorializing yourself and asking people for feedback who can be honest with you. Like, I can't show my mom my photos because she thinks all 150 are awesome, right? If I show my best friend, she's going to be like, are you kidding? No. Right, so talk to someone you trust who you know is going to give you honest feedback before you put it out there so that you can get some kind of, like, preliminary judgment from someone else aside from you or the people who won't tell you the truth.
One quick thing I think is to not be afraid to brag on yourself. Like, if you've had some success as an artist, if you've played a really awesome festival or went on a really successful tour opening for a huge band, or you know, Pitchfork said this really nice thing about you, do not be afraid to use that. But also, I think I would advise to not oversell mediocre press or like small time successes. If you're bragging about how you got like B review in the local all weekly paper to national PR outlets, it sounds like that's all that you have going on, when in fact it just means that, like, nobody has written about you yet at the national level, then you should just be focusing on talking about your music. So I think scaling the way that you talk about your success to the audience that you're talking to is an important thing.
Yeah, and I think as you're trying to figure out what your story is, it can be helpful to write and write and write and write and write and just keep going, and then have someone else review it and say, like, this part was cool, this part's interesting, and then see if you can distill it all into just like a tweet. And if you can sell someone on your story in a sentence, you know you've got an advantage there.
I think having a version of your story that you can tell in a tweet, a version that you can tell in like two sentences, a version that you can tell in a paragraph, like thinking about if you have 5 seconds, how do you sell yourself? If you have 30 seconds, how do you sell yourself? Super valuable to have all that ready to go.
Yeah. So obviously this story is important to you guys as these people who are interfacing with editorial teams at Spotify and iTunes and all this. What else do you feel like artists need to have in place before they're really going to be kind of legitimately having an opportunity like that?
I would say from the, I was just going to say from the logistical perspective, because that's where I live, the having a Facebook presence, having a Twitter handle, having an Instagram, making sure that if you've got anything that you, like a web presence in general is really valuable to have. Sometimes there are rules around what you can submit and how you can format things. And the only way we can get around those rules is if you've established yourself on the web. So I can't stress enough how, especially if you've got, you know, a KMFDM, all caps kind of band name, you really should have a web presence and make sure that it's well established before you go to release your record, or else we're going to have to make it capital K, lowercase M, lowercase D.
And from a promotion standpoint, that's something that, like Griffin said, like, it's decreasingly important, like whether you have, you know, 5,000 or a million followers, because I think really encouragingly, a lot of the services are seem interested in and invested in helping artists get discovered. But if you have 5 or 10 followers on Facebook, it's a really obvious weakness in your presence. And I kind of hate Facebook. It's a fucking chore, to be honest. But
they're recording this, Ben.
Oh. Sorry.
It's a fucking.
Yeah. But one idea, and I know, I've talked to other people, and some of my favorite artists hate doing social media. But one thing to think about is, again, going back to your team, whether that's you and mom and dad, or if that's you and your manager, or if that's everyone in your band, and saying, okay, who is the one who we cannot get to stop posting on Instagram? They're going to be in charge of this.
Yeah.
Or ask for help. Like, if you have a friend who, like, is more versed in that world than you, just ask them if they'll help you with it, and that if they want to do it for you.
Do you think people need to be touring to have these editorial opportunities on platforms? Do you think they need a video?
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, no. Yeah.
I think it really depends on your audience about touring. You know, I've talked to gospel musicians who, they're not going to tour. Their audience is their congregation, or, you know, their audience is certain festivals that are going to feature that kind of music. But if you're a rock band, you probably should be touring. You know, it just really depends on your genre and who you want your audience to be. If your audience is people who go out to see live music, you should probably consider playing out, right?
I think it's also again, going back to your goals and your expectations for what you're doing with music. So if you want to be a nationally known act that people in New York and people in Nashville and people in Chicago and people in Portland all listen to, then you have to think about how you're going to reach those people. And expecting national press to cover your band if you're not playing in those cities, or expecting press in those cities to write about your band if you're not playing in those cities, I think is a little unrealistic. So there are definitely are artists who don't tour and who have figured out ways to make it work. I think it makes it harder.
Just to step back to the question before, raise your hand if you have a verified Spotify profile. Verified Spotify artist profile.
So some opportunity in this room.
Just a few. Yeah. at one point, they had like a cap of you couldn't become verified unless you had a certain amount of followers already. Well, that cap is now gone. So it's a 10-minute process to fill out a form. But when we're pitching a song to Spotify editorial for possible inclusion in a playlist, and if they go to your artist page and you don't have a verified profile, then they're not going to feature your song. They're thinking, you haven't even taken the 10 minutes to fill out a form to verify your profile. You're probably not the kind of artist who's going to support us if we put your song on a playlist. Are you going to tweet this playlist to your followers? Probably not. I mean, you didn't even take the time to sign up for our system. So the companies like Spotify, iTunes, and like it's a give and take. If they're going to feature you, then they want you to feature them.
Yeah. And not just doing the verification, but also then adding your artist image to the service and making your profile look nice and adding playlists. And tomorrow morning at 9:30, Charles Alexander from Streaming Promotions is going to be talking in, I think, the big room, about Spotify specifically. And I think that'll be a great talk for anyone who isn't verified on Spotify and wants to know how to do more there. He'll go over a lot of that stuff, that presentation as well.
So I think it was interesting you brought up overlooking verification on Spotify, because there's a number of things people overlook just in their CD Baby account when they are signing up a release. You want to talk about some of the kind of other opportunities we offer, but people just somehow rush through? And
yeah, I think so. There's a couple things. One, there are a lot of tools to promote your music in your CD Baby account. And there are a lot of like trending reports and kind of access to resources that people don't really take advantage of. But making sure that you're opted in for the right level of digital distribution, making sure that if you want YouTube monetization, Content ID, and sync licensing, that you've opted in for it. There's also the kind of royalty collection part with CD Baby Pro Publishing. And a lot of people have come up to me today and over the last couple of days and said, are you guys a PRO? Like, no, we're not. But we're a publishing administrator, and we can handle taking those royalties for you and registering your tracks internationally. So if you're sitting there thinking, well, I'm already affiliated with ASCAP, I'm good. You're kind of good. But what happens when we deal with your publishing administration is that we're going out internationally and registering your tracks with PROs around the world, so we can really collect those royalties at a more comprehensive level. And we make sure that the publisher share gets paid out to you as well, which if you're just affiliated directly with a PRO as a songwriter, that you're not getting that portion at all. And so there's lots of things like that, I think, that people don't really take advantage of. And it's that thing I said in the beginning where it's like, you know, $10,000 of recording and hours of time and blood, sweat, and tears and all this emotion and all this process. And then I, you know, talk to people every day who are like, it has to be out right now. It got done yesterday. And like, wait a minute, guys, no. You spend all this time, spend the time to fill everything out, to really read everything about what you're doing.
Well, I cannot speak highly enough of the newest member of the CD Baby family, Show.co. It's a service that I've used for years with like Show.co. In your little booklet on page 62, there is a link.
Nice.
I know, right?
Well done.
There is a little image, a link to every CD Baby member has a free account. This is a tool that was like $50 or $60 a month for that level of access before we purchased the company. And now we're offering it to CD Baby clients totally free. It is tremendously valuable as a tool for turning fans of yours that you interact with in one way into fully invested fans of yours that you can access across platforms. So it's a great way when you have, say, a video that you want people to watch and people are excited about, you know, a new video or a mixtape that you made that they can download. You can create like a gate for that content where they have to follow you in order to see the video or to download the playlist. And it's a really cool way to get a bunch of followers, whether it's on Twitter or on Facebook. But most importantly, there's a follow on Spotify function in it, and it's super duper useful. And I recommend that everyone uses it. It's a great way to turn your Facebook fans into Spotify followers.
Yeah.
And there's, hold on one second about that. The guys that are sitting out there at the Host Baby booth do the support for Show.co. So if you have questions about Show.co, you can visit the Host Baby booth and they'll tell you all about it.
And if you do a Show.co campaign to build your Spotify following, you don't have to be afraid that people, fans of yours who aren't on Spotify, you know, it's not an opportunity for them, because you just check a little checkbox. And if they're not on Spotify, they can leave their email. So at least you're building your email list and they can unlock the same content. Yeah. So definitely use that.
Feels like a broken record, I think, for most of us at CD Baby, but owning your fans by having them on your own email list is so important. Like, just how many times have people been like, man, Facebook changed their algorithm and now I got to pay to reach my fans? Like, okay, get their email address and send them an email directly.
Yeah, we've been talking a lot about rushing through this sign-up process. So many artists will rush through. They'll get the distribution lined up for the music, but they skip publishing collection. They skip YouTube monetization. I'll deal with that later. Then you get busy. You're on tour. You're just promoting the record, and you forget. And that's the window in which you're going to have the most activity around that material, is when it's brand new. So if you miss your chance to collect the publishing royalties because you're not signed up, or, you know, any of these things. So just do it before, and then you'll be ready for, you know, the stars align and you do have some real success, then you're set up to collect on it.
Yeah. Real quickly, back talking about Show.co, one thing that I think is important when you're launching an album And again, making your little playlist that you're adding your singles to, you can be building your sort of fan base and following by using tools like show.co leading up to the release of your record. And everybody that follows you on Spotify, everybody that follows your playlist, when your album comes out, they get a notification in the app. It's more likely for your new album that just came out to end up on their Discover Weekly playlist, to end up on their Release Radar playlist in Spotify. And those algorithmic playlists and tracks that perform really well in them are a big part of how their curatorial team picks songs for the editorial playlists. So having your fans engaging with you on Spotify is one of the easiest ways to make sure that those songs ultimately can surface to the curators.
Do we want to tell them how to get in touch with you guys about...
Yeah, so if you're releasing music and if you have an album coming out that you're excited about, that you have a set of goals and strategies around the release, especially if you're, you know, working with a publicist, if you've got a budget for marketing for your record, and you're, you know, touring in support of it, we definitely want to hear about it. Griffin and I pitch all of the different DSPs that we work with on featuring tracks and featuring albums, and we're really excited to hear about new music coming from CD Baby artists. The most important thing, again, is having enough time. We can't really do anything without at least 30 days of lead time between when the album is delivered and we know about it to the release of the first single. So it's, again, a really long release window, but we need that much time to get the info out to the partners. They have deadlines for us as well. So yeah, we have a form actually online, and the link is, I believe it's bit.ly/pitchcdbaby. bit.ly.com.
bit.ly.
Yeah. Or bit.ly.com. It works, by the way. / pitch CD baby.
No. CD baby pitch.
Oh. Sorry.
Okay. Forget everything you just heard. Yes, I believe we'll be able to put it on a slide or online. But one more time, bit.ly.com.
/ CD baby pitch.
Talk to us later.
We're professionals, you guys.
Yeah, let's take some questions.
Yeah. We'll figure this out while we ask questions.
Don't ask what the link is.
Is someone going around with a mic?
A mic?
A
microphone?
Go ahead, we can hear you.
Yeah.
All right.
So the question was, do you focus on one site based on what your strengths are, or do you go to all sites?
For a pre-release.
Yeah.
My suggestion is to do for your singles before your album comes out, have them delivered to all of the partners and have a pre-order on iTunes with an instant gratification track. And yeah, in terms of the attention that you give to them, I think it's important to post links to all of the sites, at least to the top two, to Apple Music, iTunes, and to Spotify. You don't need to like really drive home any of those links. If you'd rather have people buying your music directly from CD Baby or from Bandcamp or whatever, you can definitely put most of your focus into those areas. But having the links to the streaming services and to the services where you're running pre-orders is super important, especially if you're looking to pitch them on featuring the music. They definitely want to see that. At the same time, you know, if you're, again, it goes back to kind of your goals. If one of your goals is to increase your presence on Spotify, then obviously sharing your Spotify link more widely is going to be a big part of your campaign. If that's not one of your goals, then it's not as important, obviously.
Well, and also, if anybody was in Tracy's welcome talk yesterday, he showed a slide of the kind of the division of where people are purchasing music, and streaming is quickly becoming a really big player there. It's like 44%, I think, now. So I would say, as a consumer myself, and I'm not going to tell you how old I am, but I'm old enough to know that I used to buy a lot of CDs and cassettes. I only listen to Spotify now. That's the only way I consume music. And I think there are a lot of people who are like that. So I would definitely recommend embracing streaming because it's not going anywhere. No. And definitely, you know, focusing at least some energy on streaming.
I think it's also worth noting that with streaming, there are people like, how many people in this room subscribe to a streaming service? And I bet that, you know, a good 50% of those people subscribe to Spotify, probably 30% to Apple Music, and then there's a bunch of other services, but people pay $10 a month and they want to hear all of the music in the world for that price. So it is important to make sure that you're reaching those people with the appropriate link. A cool tool is Smart URL. You can make a link that redirects automatically to the user's preferred site if they have chosen one, or to a list of possible sites for them to listen to your music.
Well, that's going to do it for this edition of the podcast. Again, if you have questions or comments about releasing an album, if you have some suggestions for other artists, something that worked well for you, a tip or trick, feel free to call our listener line at 360-524-2209, or you can email us at podcast@cdbabypodcast.com, or, you know, head on over to the podcast website and weigh in on the show notes. Lastly, we still have the $29 offer going on at CD Baby, and I don't know how much longer it's going to last. Head on over to cdbaby.com. You can sign up your new album or back catalog. Use coupon code GETMORE to save $20 off regular standard distribution. Or you can use the coupon code GETMOREPRO to save $20 off the Pro distribution package, which includes distribution and publishing royalty collection on top of that. So it's a great deal, and that offer is probably coming to an end soon. So be sure you get in on that while the going's good. And more podcasts on the way. We'll catch you soon. You've been listening to the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast, broadcasting from Portland, Oregon, USA.